back to the Practice Human podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Casella. Welcome to 2019. There's a lot of new things happening here, especially as you might have noticed, there's intro music on the podcast now, which I'm excited about. These kind of things excite me. I'm a total nerd about technology and also a lover of music. So I'm thrilled about that. Anyway, I'm enjoying putting this podcast together. It's a really fun creative project for myself, but especially I'm enjoying all the conversations I'm having with great minds and specialists in interdisciplinary movement and embodiment practice, in therapy, education. Most importantly, I think, is how all of these things are enmeshed in everyday life. So if you've been listening regularly, thank you so much for listening. And if you're new here, welcome. I hope you enjoy these conversations. You can access the podcast now through my website, caitlincasella.com. It's just a little bit more user-friendly way, I think, of looking at it if you're not on something like iTunes or Spotify or Google Play, which podcast is available in all of those formats. I did a whole remodel of my website, so everything there while you're there poking around includes workshops that I'm offering here in New York City and my regular in-person classes, as well as some new online content that I'm rolling out soon in the coming weeks. Also, if you're looking ahead to the summer, I know it's a little ways off, but many of us start to plan summer getaways quite early in the spring. I'm teaching a movement retreat at Heathen Hill Yoga, which is really one of my favorite places in the whole world. And if you're looking for just a quick getaway in the New York area, it's in the Catskills, New York. That retreat is happening August 2nd through 4th, and all that information just landed on my website. And if you're new to me and my offerings, everything that I teach combines yoga practice or things that I've taken as useful from yoga practice with physical therapy, strength training, Feldenkrais, functional range conditioning. I also include a little bit of self-massage and plenty of rest and conscious relaxation, because I think those are vitally important in our modern society today. My conversation with Trina was wonderful. I had a really good time catching up with her about her day-to-day movement practice, where she's based in Los Angeles. Trina is the creator of Yoga Deconstructed and Pilates Deconstructed, which take an interdisciplinary approach to foster an embodied understanding of yoga and Pilates and their relationship to modern movement science. Trina teaches all over and offers fantastic educational courses online. Her book, Yoga Deconstructed, Transitioning from Rehabilitation Back into the Yoga Studio, is slated to be published by Handspring Publishing in December 2019. Check out her workshop offerings for 2019. She's going all around the country, so she might be landing in a city near you. I know some of those are close to selling out. So if you're interested in studying with Trina this year, definitely head over to her website, trinaaltman.com. Also check out her online courses and follow her on Instagram for some great little snippets of what she's teaching. I love seeing what she's up to on Instagram. She shares invaluable information for mixing up your practice and also making movement really fun. So Trina and I discuss the importance of in-person movement practice. Movement practice is a form of social interaction. I know there's a lot of stuff online these days, which is wonderful. So many of us as educators have been able to bring our material to new audiences with the online format. But there's something so special about being in a room with people to practice. So we discuss that element and also about all the value in moving in a variety of ways for pain management and overall health. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Trina. Hi, Trina. How are you? Thanks for coming on the podcast.
It's so nice to see you, not in person, but at least just like in real time.
I know. Yeah, in real time for real conversation, which I'm really excited about. I'm really looking forward to talking to you. I think I met you in person a couple years ago when you were here in New York City teaching some workshops. I think you were teaching Pilates Deconstructed and Yoga Deconstructed. And yeah. I came in for some of the yoga ones. Yep. And it was really great. And I've stayed in touch with you through social media and through a lot of our mutual friends.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I always heard so much about you From Laurel, and I'm like, well, anyone who's a friend of Laurel's is a friend of mine, especially because I know how close you guys are. And then the more I get to know about you, I'm like, of course they're friends, because you guys, you have so much in common. And
yeah, I think there are like little corners of our brains that are kind of shared between the two of us too, in the way we think about things in some ways, which is cool. Yeah, well, it's really good to talk to you. I'm curious to hear about everything you're doing right now in your movement practice, because I know you're a true multidisciplinarian, really interdisciplinary practice. That's one of my new favorite words, multidisciplinarian, interdisciplinary practice in what you do and also what you teach. And so I'd like to start just by hearing about like your, I don't know what a week looks like for you in terms of the kind of practices or training that you're doing and classes that you're taking. And I know you teach in a lot of different styles and methods too. So maybe we'll just jump in with that. Tell me about the trainer that you're working with right now.
Yeah, his name is Andrew Serrano, and my friend Jules Mitchell was working with him, and I had been looking for a trainer for a while, but just was kind of afraid because I'm hypermobile, and I knew I would need somebody that was like a super nerd that, you know, could could answer my questions and not just count reps. And so, yeah, I've been working with him for about a year and a half, once a week. And I've learned so much. He does powerlifting competitions, so he's like really in it. Mm-hmm. And so I've learned, you know, deadlift, back squat, front squat, and bench press, which were all things that I just didn't feel comfortable trying on my own. And was like, knew I would never, ever go to a CrossFit class because I wanted to learn that in a one-on-one environment, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like, hey, yeah, just go pick up that thing and try it.
I can totally relate.
Well, and even CrossFit is more like Olympic lifting, because I've been learning there's, what is it? There's bodybuilding, there's powerlifting, and then there's Olympic lifting.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to do anything that's an Olympic sport. And
right. Right.
That's like way above my pay grade. So, yeah, so it's been fun. I would say my biggest takeaway has been learning about how to create global tension.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's something that is taught in the FRC training, and it's probably even it was taught in the yoga space of like, you know, engage or, you know, what I remember they'd say, lift your kneecaps. And I'd be like, how do I lift my kneecaps? Like my quads are not strong, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And so now that I have this base level of strength, a lot of imagery cues finally make sense that never, ever made sense because I have enough tension like a normal person for normal cues to make sense.
That's interesting. Yeah. That was kind of a big revelation for me because I just did the FRC training in September, and it was wild to be in a place where I was purposely like irradiating, like creating as much tension as I could everywhere in my whole body. And like, it's okay if you make faces and it's okay if your forehead wrinkles up and your eyebrows are crinkled. Whereas like, I felt like there wasn't permission to do that in yoga classes it's said explicitly like soften your eyeballs and your eyebrows and your cheekbones and your jaw and like, or can you be in this position with as little effort as possible? Like efficiency, the least amount of effort and tension possible to sustain the position. So it's like two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And it was wild.
Yeah. And they're both wonderful. Like, I think it's really wonderful to be able to do both.
Yeah.
You know, it's because they're two different ends of the spectrum. So, I do that once a week. And then I take a jumping trampoline class.
Fun.
So there's, I guess the teachers that I take from are trained. The brand is called Jumping Fitness, and they're based out of Czech Republic. And so there are not a lot of, I mean, in LA, like I'm so lucky, the place where I go is like, you know, 10 minutes from my house. But what I love about it is it's basically like cardio dance meets high impact aerobics from the 80s, but you're doing it on your own, you know, like Bellicon trampoline.
Mm-hmm.
Because cardio to me is so freaking boring. Like I don't like spin bike. I don't want to sit on anything, you know? And so, and I like dancing, but a lot of times jumping up and down on a hardwood floor isn't always what my body can handle anymore. So it's been so much fun to challenge my brain. Like there's a song that'll be like the coordination song where it's like, you know, you're doing this with your arms and this with your feet, and it's on purpose to challenge your brain.
Cool.
There's a balance song, there's a stomping song, which is like super hardcore jumping fast. And you know, then there'll be like a Bollywood song. So it's, you know, I'm a nerd like you. When I move, I'm usually thinking about how I'm moving.
Right.
As opposed to like, oh, I'm going to get on the elliptical and, you know, like watch a TV show while I'm on the elliptical.
So
it's been really fun. I try to do that at least twice a week, sometimes three times, because I just feel so good.
That's great.
You know, I think as a kid, we all jumped and bounced and leaped. And then over time, especially if you do yoga, you just lose all of your elasticity and your bounciness. and then to just like jump into it again, you know, and you hear that thud of like, oh, well, I'll just jump rope. And it's like thud, thud. And you're like, nope, this is not good. To be able to jump without abandon, like, oh, I'm not going to sprain my ankle because I'm on a soft surface that,
right,
you know, I can rebound off of, has been really nice. I mean, I take jump board Pilates reformer classes, which is jumping, you know, you're lying down and there's spring resistance.
Oh, right. I know what you mean. Yep. Yep.
So
had to think about it for a second.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with reformer stuff, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. But it's still very slow and controlled, like yoga, as opposed to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what else? I do a lot. When I can, there's two, I'd say probably once a week. There's two teachers that teach at Equinox, like a cardio dance class that I absolutely love. Aaron Davis, he's down in Palos Verdes, and then Dane Sorensen. And they, if you've ever watched The Fitness Marshal on YouTube.
I haven't.
Okay,
oh, no.
Check it out.
I have to go down a rabbit hole with that, maybe.
Dane teaches a lot of stuff like that. But yeah, I think, you know, I'm 46 years old, so like I don't care what I look like when I'm dancing. I just watch them dance and like mirror neurons pretend in my mind I'm dancing exactly like they are.
Right. That's like a good feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And and it's good because, again, like cardio is good for your mind and your body. And the dancing is really good for your brain. So, so yeah, I do that generally once a week. And then I take a reformer class or a tower class. So tower is like the Cadillac, but, you know, so this it's, you know, when your feet are in the straps or your hands are in the straps and the reformers, there's pulleys that are attached to the springs. Uh-huh. Whereas if you're on the Cadillac or the tower, it's just springs. So it's a lot more load.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a push through bar. So it's just a little different. So I usually do like a reformer and a tower class, once a week. And then Feldenkrais, when I can, the teacher that I was taking classes with has been on a little sabbatical. So, but the nice thing about the internet and online is I do, you know, I would say my yoga practice happens at home online because in order to find somebody who I like the way they teach that fits in with my schedule in real life in a place that I can actually drive to and it's not going to take over an hour doesn't exist.
Right. Yeah. Moment.
Yeah.
I know that's one of the tricky things geographically in LA is it takes so long to get somewhere that sometimes it's just not feasible, depending on location. And it's, I guess it's something that's a bit of a luxury here in New York City, is we can hop on the subway and be somewhere pretty quickly. But I can still relate to finding the right teacher at the right time that's teaching a style that's right for what you need, like, now, these few months, or in this moment, or this year, whatever you're working with. And I know we get pretty specific.
I was taking a friend of mine, Derek Beres. He used to live in New York, and he would teach a class on Monday mornings that was, you know, like 5 minutes from my house. And then he changed his schedule and like dropped that class and to a different location. So, you know, it happens. And luckily these days, it's nice. There's so much online that you can do. And if you teach the modality, especially for me, since I'm hypermobile, I don't need to spend a lot of time doing like traditional yoga. It's, you know, and when I want to stretch, I just kind of do it on my own.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's one of the great things actually about connecting, as we've been doing on Instagram and on social media, is it's brought us in touch with so many people doing things outside of the typical yoga kind of sequencing and package that I don't think we would have found each other otherwise. Without social media. It's actually something I was talking to Laurel about the other day. And for people listening, I'm talking about Laurel Beaversdorf, who was on the podcast a little while back. You can listen to her episode. But we were saying like this sort of shift that's happened in the world of yoga, actually, it might not have really happened as it's happened if it wasn't for Instagram in some ways.
Definitely.
Because it puts us in touch with people doing different things that we wouldn't have known are out there, people in other cities or even in the city where we live, but we just wouldn't have found out about them otherwise.
Absolutely. And cool. Yeah. And even I would say like Diane Bruni's Facebook group, I think that started in maybe early 2017. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge shift because I met a lot of people through that group. And then I feel like when the analytics changed on Facebook, which was probably like September of last year, people who were more resistant to Instagram, or at least I was, because I was like, I don't like photos are boring. And it used to be you could only do a 15-second video on Instagram. And then when they upped it to a minute, I was like, oh, okay, this, like, now I have more things to share here. They're giving me a full minute. There's videos, not just pictures. And so, and I think the way the challenges work and all of that, it's just a lot easier. Facebook, you can max out on your friends, and it's just easier to find. The way that Instagram works is if you like a whole bunch of somebody's stuff, they'll show you that person's stuff on your feed regularly. So it's easy to kind of pick what you want on your feed because you just like the things that you want to see more often.
Right, right.
Actually, yeah.
That's a wild place. It's amazing. But I appreciate everything you share on there. I think it also speaks to all of the ways that you practice in the ways that you share, because you're sharing what you're doing day to day in your movement practice. Then you're also showing a lot of little clips of things that you're teaching that so clearly draw from your experience with Pilates and yoga and Feldenkrais, and the ways that you take the resistance work from Pilates and move it onto a sliding blanket on the floor. And like, there's such an interesting mix in everything that you share, that it, I don't know, I think it gives a really true perspective of what you offer, being someone who's taken your workshop before, or at least one of your sets of workshops, and seen it. And then with the little bit of therapy ball work, kind of as like marking feeling in a sensory way, landmarks on the body, and also kind of marking out landmarks on the body visually. I think it's all there in what you share. And I really like it. I appreciate it. It's cool.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, my goal is I try all these things. Like, I forgot. I've started taking, my husband started working with a trainer, when I, like a little bit after I did, cause I think he was worried that I was going to get too much stronger because he's always gone to the gym and lifted weights. But when I was telling him what I was doing, like, you know, I mean, he did just turn 40, so he's having a little bit of a midlife crisis. So anyways, he's been working with this trainer and he has no body awareness. Like he will freely admit that. You know, he's like, if you tell me to move my right hand, I'm going to move my left foot. And so she is amazing because, you know, she's figured out how to teach him movement. Mm-hmm. And her passion is the steel mace. And so I've been doing some steel mace, sessions with her and it's been really fun. And that's another thing that's like, whenever I try all these things and the people that come to my classes, or even workshops don't necessarily aren't open to trying things or, you know, I'll say when I teach, like I'm teaching this, this is what we would do on the Reformer. Or I'm teaching this, this is what we would do in Feldenkrais class, but they won't go to Pilates or they won't go to a Feldenkrais class. And so as I'm learning, when I take classes in other modalities, the first place my brain goes to is how can I translate this so that they can also experience it, though they're not gonna, you know, so like, oh, well, instead of the steel mace club, like we'll roll up our yoga mat and pretend it's a steel mace club or, you know, the Viper. I take a HIIT class. I forgot I take a HIIT class once a week and we use like sandbells and Vipers and, you know, elastic bands and dumbbells, steps. What else? Oh, we use the RMT, which is actually, it's like a club bell, but it's plastic and it has sand in it so that nobody kills each other.
Right. What is the Viper? Is that tube thing with the handles, the like heavy? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It comes in different weights and it's just like a plastic tube.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is, I mean, I think the idea of, no matter how many times I say, oh, well, this is from Gyrotonic, you should try Gyrotonic. You know, it's like the people, they just, you know, or it's not like, this is my livelihood. So they're like, yeah, that's great, Trina. But like, I have a job, you know, like,
right.
I'm lucky that I just get to your class, you know, once a week. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's really fun for me because I don't, I guess I don't see movements. I understand that there are different movement modalities, but my brain doesn't like to sort of comprehend that. My brain is always like, it's all just movement. They're all just a bunch of tools. Let's do this.
Well, and I've been hearing too, I don't know if it was actually from something you posted or just that I'd seen around that the idea that our bodies don't really know the difference, they know the difference between like perceiving external load versus not having that external load, right, or the sensory feedback you get from lying on the floor versus standing up on your feet. You know, you get different things from different kinds of relationships to gravity and load and positionings. But like my body doesn't know if I'm doing a lying down sequence on the floor that's like Feldenkrais versus something I get in like a Pilates mat class versus a lying down on the floor sequence in a yoga class. Like it's movement.
Yeah. Well, and I think whatever your sort of movement background was, if you're a yoga teacher that you did before you found yoga, that's also going to inform, you know, how you are as a teacher. And for me, my background was gymnastics and competitive cheerleading. And so when I, you know, came to yoga, I was like, oh, cool. This is like all the acrobatic stuff that, you know, not you all of it, but a lot of it, minus the, like the balance beam and the bars and the vault. And then when I found Pilates, I'm like, oh, cool. Here's the balance beam and the bar and the vault. Like here's some equipment to support a lot of these, you know, giant movements that we're doing. All of them are giant. And, versus maybe somebody who comes to yoga who is like a complete academic and, you know, not really a movement person first, then, you know, it would be easier for them, you know, to maybe not feel the need to, I don't know. I mean, I'm that way with food too. Like I like different kinds of food and, you know,
right.
When we went to Italy, I was like, I can't eat any more pizza or pasta or gelato. Like, I just can't, you know?
Variety.
I like it, but not every single day, you know?
Yeah. Variety is a good thing. Well, I think we also kind of greet any new experience through the lens of our past experiences. Kind of like you were saying, like any new thing, our brains want to connect it to what's familiar from before. Yes. Like I find that in travel too, like you go to a place you've never seen before and you're like, oh, this reminds me of Canal Street in New York City or whatever. And every new thing you come across comes with like this whole backlog of all the other past experiences you've had and then you're relating to this new thing.
So
like what's one thing to one person might be something else to someone else.
Yes. And even with yoga, I remember, well, in my 200-hour training, part of our homework was to take, I can't remember how many different types or styles of yoga classes, and then, you know, write about our experiences. And I think, you know, we had to take like one hot yoga class, I think it was like a Bikram class, and maybe one Kundalini class, I think a power yoga class, because my 200-hour was more, I guess the asana part was kind of mostly Iyengar-ish, you know? And so she wanted us to understand that, you know, there's all these other, I mean, she brought in and we had a day that was, or, you know, we did restorative and we had like a kids yoga and, you know, it was just a very much of an overview. I had no idea when I signed up. There was just the only 200-hour, you know, in the area. There were no choices then. It was like, either you do it or you don't, and this is the one.
Right.
And it turned out to be a wonderful experience. But I'm really grateful that it was so broad, I think, because I was exposed to a lot of different types of yoga.
Yeah. And I think, it's kind of a shame. I think sometimes when I hear from people that they've tried something once and they're like, ah, it's not for me. I don't like it. It's like out of anything. I mean, not just yoga, but go for a massage with a massage therapist, go to a physical therapy session, go to a like high intensity session with a trainer. Like it's such a different thing from one person to the next, and what different people gravitate toward is so individual. So
yes.
Yeah. It's so vast in the world of even just yoga. And then there's all the other things next to that. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
One of the things just going off this discussion of all experiencing and trying out all these different modalities, I wanted to talk to you about yoga, not just yoga classes, but, any kind of movement classes that are done in groups as a community endeavor, sort of a social endeavor. I know from following you on social media, it seems like for you, the movement aspect or the fitness aspect or whatever it is you're going for is one piece of it. And the other is to connect with people. It's like, get out there, meet new people with differing points of view, be in a room with people, which I think is important, as great as all these online courses are. It's really awesome to be in a room with people. So I just wanted to ask you about sort of your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, the first place it's funny that my brain kind of goes to is religion. And I think people in the past found community and sort of, you know, even a lot of friendships through their church or their synagogue or their mosque. And now that people's livelihoods usually involve not moving and sitting at a desk all day long and then driving and then sitting at home, the idea of sitting in, you know, like a church or a temple on Sunday morning, it's like, wait, this is the only time I have to move is maybe on the weekends because they're too tired at night when they get home. And so, you know, I've been teaching. We moved to LA 8 years ago. And I've always taught my group classes at Equinox and then at one other place that's like an interdisciplinary movement studio. So a place that has Pilates, yoga, Feldenkrais, physical therapy, maybe, you know, dance classes or, you know. And I've found that those kind of places, I mean, I'm sure it's the same at a yoga studio as well, that they're the people are coming to move because movement makes them feel better, but they're coming to see the other people in the class. They're coming to see the teachers. Mm-hmm. They're coming to see the people that they walk past down the hallway that are going to a different class in a different, you know, a location, and especially at the gym because it's a membership and, you know, there's no limit to how many classes you can take. It doesn't cost extra or how much time you spend there. You know, I've been teaching the same class time slots essentially for like the last 7.5 years or so. And so, new people always come because it's the gym, and, people come and go because of their schedules. But yeah, it's so wonderful to know that, you know, you're going to see certain people and those people are going to see each other. Mm-hmm. And it's all around something that's not, I mean, at least the people that come to my class, they enjoy it. I think there are some classes that people go to because they're like, I need to burn calories. So, you know, I'm going to take this spin class or this HIIT class or, but they're really coming to my classes. I mean, some of them are like, I need more mobility and that's why they're there. Mm-hmm. But they, for the most part, enjoy it or they don't keep coming back.
Right.
And so to go to something regularly that doesn't involve performance, because my classes are not performance-based, that doesn't involve like status or accomplishing something, you know, it's just about being there, showing up, trying some new things that might be challenging, doing some things that are really easy to relax, is like, it's just something that's so needed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, as the teacher, you're witnessing that happen. So you get all the like good juju coming from watching that happen. And, you know, I mean, I move a lot when I teach. I don't just walk around and talk. So I'm getting, you know, movement in too. And it's, yeah, it's really, just like we were saying about the Instagram shift, I think that's another shift, is that I think movement is the community that's often, maybe not in the middle of the country where we grew up, where people are still more religious, but in other places where religion has become less important, that yoga and movement has maybe filled some of those gaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For people. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I actually, maybe you heard the studio here, the Yoga Works Westside Studio, where I took your workshops recently, closed. And I've seen a few of those students down at the Soho Studio coming to my class. And I've heard from many of them, many different people, a few times that they're like, oh, yeah, I miss the class schedule, the teachers, the practice, whatever. And, but they've explicitly said the thing I miss the most is that little lobby space where people are coming and going from like four different rooms at different times. And you see people in a crossover. And I miss that, seeing other yoga teachers just in the space in between that crossover from one class to the next. And but students have told me that they're like, I miss that lobby, that little couch, and just hanging out. And sometimes they would hang out for an hour after class. They just get caught up in conversation and make friends. And it's such a beneficial thing and such a needed thing. It's really a shame, actually. I don't know what the landscape is so much in LA, but here in New York, so many yoga studios are closing because of the rent prices in New York City. And so things are turning to more looking for more online sources, or just not as frequently going to the same place again and again and seeing the same people again and again. So so it's getting a little bit lonelier in the movement world.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think, you know, the other, I've always taught my private clients at the interdisciplinary studio, that not at Equinox, but I've always chosen a place that wasn't just Pilates, that had other modalities, for that same reason, because then there's more teachers, there's more classes going on, there's more people coming in and through. And I do think it's easier to build community that way, in the sense of, well, you know, if you're doing, I mean, the boutique studios are super popular. There's no question about it. But I think they have phases, like bar, there were bar studios like on every block. And then, you know, I think they've started to close down some of them I've seen. Mm. And, you know, when something's really specific, I mean, yoga can be like this too, but there's different styles of yoga, so it's a little less. So, yeah, I think people either get bored or they get injured.
Right.
And so then, yes, they're not only losing the thing they were doing regularly for their movement practice, but they're losing the community versus places that have different types of movement all under one roof. You know, it's a little easier. But, yeah, even the space where I... Yeah, the interdisciplinary studios where I've taught Pilates since I've lived here, two of the three, the previous two closed because of rent going up, because it's so hard to not be like a giant corporate chain and pay the rent.
Yeah, totally. So you have a bunch of workshops coming up this year. It looks like a pretty big travel schedule.
Yeah.
I'm going all over.
I only book myself. I really try hard to only book myself for one thing a month. Because I, you know, it's funny, you know, because I love my private clients and teaching my regular classes, a lot of people are like, aren't you at that point where you just stop doing that and you just travel, you know, and you just teach online? And I am at that point, but I don't want to do it because I really like what I learn from my clients and them and from my classes. So, in order to be sane and still, you know, like teach during the week, I can't travel too much. So I limit myself to once a month, and there's a couple months that, usually two, that my husband and I will go on a trip, because he gets a lot. He works at the VA hospital. So he works for the government. So he gets 6 weeks vacation a year, which is like unheard of.
Wow.
Yeah. and so he's going to take it. And then he's like, well, if you're not, you know, are you coming? You know? And I'm like, yeah, I'm coming. yeah, I'm writing a book, and the workshops that I'm teaching this year, almost all of them, except for two weekends, and Momentum Fest, are all weekend of workshops that are based on the book that I'm writing for Handspring Publishing. Cool. So that's a new thing for me. And it's been a good challenge because, you know, I've been teaching movement workshops like the ones that you took for a long time. And I love doing that. I'm starting to, you know, like I've put together a pretty elaborate PowerPoint presentation for these new workshops, and there's still tons of movement and then workshops based on my book, but you know, there's a didactic portion, and so it'll be interesting. I've taught it twice so far, and I'm sure, you know, as somebody who teaches teachers, like every time you teach something, you know, you learn new things, and then you're like, oh, I want to take this out and put this in, or, you know, so, which just keeps it interesting.
Yeah, definitely interesting. But also what I think might be scary about the idea of a book, or at least to me, to think about that as something that, like, once that's written, it's out there, and there's like going back in a little while later and be like, oh, I don't like the way that sounded, like changing up things. Because I feel like for me anyway, just in everything I'm doing, it's so fluid, and I don't feel like anything is ever set in my understanding at any one time.
No.
And when I write down today, next week, I'm going to be like, oh shit, that's like, I don't know that that's like what I believe anymore.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that was a huge hurdle for me with the internet and, you know, teaching live. I mean, everything was a hurdle. Teaching live was a huge hurdle for me because I didn't like to get up in front of people. But then after that hurdle was crossed, this idea of like, well, if I say it in the classroom or in a training and it turns out to not be right, it just kind of goes away. It kind of vanishes, you know, right. Versus if I say it, you know, on the internet in a, or in a podcast interview, like it's there forever, you know, for eternity. But then I came to realize that it's like, yes, it is. But, you know, when I look back at a blog that I wrote 5 years ago and I cringe, you know, it's like I trust that people will also look at that and go, oh, well, she wrote that 5 years ago.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's becoming accepted and understood, at least by people who are seeking understanding of science, of the human body. And it's all like evolving and changing every day. And yeah.
Yeah, and how much we don't know, and that we're all just doing the best that we can with the newest information that is coming out. And yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, how old are you?
37.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you get to be a certain age, you think about, like, when I think about just how I was trained as a gymnast, you know, in the 70s or the, you know, 80s. But then I also have clients who have kids and, like, you know, I'll hear about how their, you know, soccer training is. And it's, I mean, it's a little better, but it's not necessarily that much better. Mm. And so if we cut ourselves some slack and go like, okay, you know, if we're keeping up with everything and modifying things as we learn, that's the best that we can do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, the book is kind of, you know, it's going to be, it's the title is called Yoga Deconstructed: Bridging the Gap from Rehab to the Classroom.
Hmm. cool.
And I think all of us have been working in that realm of going like, oh yeah, people who come to yoga, you know, are sitting at a desk usually most of the day. And so like, how are these things, these poses that are mostly end ranges of motion, actually going to serve them? And yes, that's what they're expecting because they saw the picture on the billboard. But, you know, right. what can we do instead? And little by little, it's changing, I think.
Totally. Or at least
in my little bubble that I live in, it's changing.
Yeah. I spend a lot of time, I mean, working with private clients with a number of physical conditions and where regular just activities of life are a challenge, to expect that they like that they should strive to do downward facing dog with like perfect alignment is just so I don't know. It's not unreasonable. Like they could do it eventually with enough like understanding and enough practice. But like, right. Is it relevant? Is that something right. that's going to serve them at yeah. all? And if doing it is a goal, so that'll give them some kind of feeling of fulfillment, then sure, great. Like that's a good reason to do something. But some of the shapes in yoga just seem, yeah, just kind of irrelevant, I think, to a lot of people in their lives. And yeah. exploring outside of that and all the other ways to move, there's so much that gets left out.
Yeah. I mean, I have always, you know, I've had a private client practice, ever since I, you know, got certified as a Pilates teacher, but I've always taught all my privates, at a Pilates studio because I like using the equipment because I feel like I can, you know, approximate like functional things that they need to be doing.
Yeah.
And my friends who have, you know, been teaching yoga privates for all these years, I'm just like, how do you do it? Like, you know, my client, like it took her a year to be able to get up and down off the floor,
right.
but we were able to do stuff because of the Cadillac and the reformer and the Wunda chair and the ladder barrel. You know, so there wasn't like this endless boredom of like, I'm gonna, you know, try to get you, because mobility takes a lot more time to achieve, I think, than strength. Mm. You know, the neurological adaptation.
Yeah, yeah.
Strength, it's usually like 6 weeks versus for flexibility and, you know, connective tissue. It can be, you know, like up to 12 to 22 months.
Hmm.
And so it's like if they can move in, you know, their middle ranges and get stronger, a lot of times that then gives them the flexibility and they don't have to suffer through this like endless stretching regime that, right. You know, some people like it, but a lot of my clients, they don't, that's not what they want to do.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. And the kind of consensus I've been seeing from a lot of people lately is like stretching. If you like doing it, it makes you feel better. Do it.
Yeah.
If you hate it, don't do it. You don't have to do it. You can do other things.
Yes. Yeah.
You don't have to do the stretching.
Well, yeah. And so, you know, I'm thinking of one client in particular, and I started her off with like, you know, she doesn't have a lot of range of motion in a lot of her joints, and like, okay, we need to do more. And even the physical therapist that, you know, I would consult with on her was like, make sure you're doing the stretching, you know, because she needs range of motion. But I realized like it was better for me to just have her do strength things in big ranges because she loved it. And then, you know, a year later she was like, yeah, I don't need that little, there's like a stick with a clip thing that she would use when she dropped something on the floor to pick it up because she couldn't bend over. And she's like, I don't need that anymore.
Awesome. You know? Yeah, you build the mobility through the strength work through a full range of motion.
Or like, you know, she wants to get up on the Cadillac and do squats, but in order to get up there, she's got to, you know, like get from the floor to the Cadillac on her knees and then from her knees on the Cadillac to standing up.
Right.
So much of it, you know, it's just like the psychology. She's like, I want to do that thing up there. That looks really cool. You know, and so to get there required all the things that she hates doing, but she doesn't know she's doing it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Tricky.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. What do you feel is your aim in your teaching right now? I know, like, just in terms of your own practice, bringing in a lot of variety, working with different people, coming from different perspectives. But in terms of your teaching right now, what would you say is your, like, main aim or thrust that you're working on that you think is, like, the most valuable tools to bring to students?
Right. Well, it's funny because I guess like my why or what motivates me is getting people to do things that they aren't regularly doing so that they have less pain. So, you know, balancing things out or cross training. And, you know, I'll introduce things that I'm, you know, trying myself. And that, of course, always changes like what I'm most excited about. So recently, because I've been doing you know, strength training, and heavier than I've ever done, I feel more comfortable kind of upping what my students and clients are doing strength wise. So, you know, for a long time, you know, it was maybe like introducing them to a lot of Pilates or a lot of Feldenkrais or ball rolling. And I feel like they've been doing all of that for a while now. And so it's been fun to introduce, just a higher level of strength. Even if, even if it's just in my verbiage that I'm talking to them. So in the past I might say like, we're doing this so that you can reach to get the cereal off the top shelf, you know, and now I'm saying, no, we're doing this so that you can put your 25 pound piece of luggage in the overhead compartment kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it might sound, or I'll say like, we're, you know, I've been bringing more, I've always used the little green loop bands, but ever since, you know, taking Laurel's online workshops with resistance bands and following, Julia Pline. And then there's a woman here in LA who does a resistance band yoga class. I've been bringing the longer bands in. And so, you know, it's easier, like I'll have them in Dandasana doing rows and I teach at the gym. And so a lot of times I would say like, we do a blanket tug of war, you know, and I'm like, this is like rows, but it's just given me more ways to say like, okay, you're doing your rows out there on the, you know, machine, right. With something heavier than a green band or a blanket. If the translation is more literal. And so I'm hoping, you know, like if we hold the band overhead with, you know, both our hands and then you bend your elbows to pull it apart, I'm like, it's just like the lat pull. Whereas before I would have them do it, you know, maybe with the blanket, but it was their whole body weight. So it wasn't doable.
Right. Yeah.
Or, you know, they were doing it in partners with a blanket, but that range of motion was too much. So with the band, they can kind of go a little further out. So, yeah, I would say just really upping the strength levels and trying to increase load has been, you know, has been really fun for me.
Yeah, that's been a big thrust for me, too, for sure, because that's really what helped me get out of a lot of pain that I was having for many years of nothing but yoga, asana, and deep ranges and passive stretching. And like, yeah, it's so valuable. And I find it's interesting finding ways to get people who are accustomed to working with their body weight and gotten really comfortable with their body weight, which is never going to, I mean, not significantly going to get heavier suddenly, like right now in this moment, try heavier. I feel like there's a little bit of a fear factor in going for higher load and more resistance. But I think things like the resistance bands and what I can imagine the kind of resistance you get from the Pilates reformers and the springs and is like, yeah, like you were saying, just something that's attainable enough to create the finesse and the understanding so that then if they do want to go heavier, they've like laid the groundwork and just some of the like initial conditioning to be able to handle that load in a really skillful way. And I think it's really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whenever I teach something and then a lot of people have the realization, they're like, oh my God, I never realized my inner thighs were so weak. You know, what should I do? And it's like, walk down the hall, take a left, sit on this piece of equipment, put the pads go on the insides of your thighs. Then there's a little stick and you stick it in a hole and there's a thing that says 10 or 5. Right. So go with the lightest weight, you know, and like, you don't even have to worry about your alignment because it's like a chair.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why lifting weights was so easy for me because, you know, it was like the late 80s when Nautilus came out that I went with my mom to her trainer and he was essentially like showing her how to use the Nautilus equipment. So I think, you know, as much as that's maligned as like not functional and it's just one joint and one vector, it's like, no, that's actually the perfect way to start.
Yeah. To start.
You know? Yeah. If you don't have a trainer and even, you know, I mean, I think compound movements and, you know, things like squats and lunges and kettlebell swings and all of that is really awesome. But at the same time, like most of our nation is deconditioned and underloaded. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then if they do load, like say they're loading, you know, in a plank or a push-up, right? Like that's to go from no load at all, like pushing a grocery cart, to pushing, you know, a good portion of your body weight. Like that's really great. Like go sit on the machine and do the chest press. And then like, maybe you'll have enough awareness to do that with two dumbbells and not like wobble all around because it gives you the alignment for free, which trains your nervous system, which, you know, helps you sort of, it's like training wheels.
Yeah.
You know, totally. And there are gyms that are like, you know, 24 hours that are, you know, $15 a month all over the country. You know, when people are like, I can't afford it. I'm like, really? There's no YMCA. There's no, you know, I mean, when I lived in New York, I remember I was in the East Village and I went to, it was a public gym. It was on 14th Street. And it was, I think it was $30 for the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably more now because this is in the 90s. But like, I mean, the equipment was pretty old and antiquated, but it was a gym and I went to that gym.
I actually go. My gym is a city rec center and that's probably what that was then. And now it's $75 for 6 months or $150 for the year. Yeah. And they have a swimming pool and they have classes in the pool. And the gym is just like exactly what I need. It has all the things I need. It has like a bar I can hang from. It's got a nice rack of kettlebells. It's got a couple weight machines.
Yeah.
It's got like a stair climber treadmill. I don't use those that much, but I do like to walk on like steep inclines and stuff on the treadmills. And then there's like this little back room with a sun skylight and all the toys, like all the weighted bars and BOSU balls and mats and lighter, bigger kettlebells that you can kind of throw around in there, and medicine balls, all that stuff, all the balls and blocks and mats and like everything is in there. Those, what are they called? You just said it earlier, the handled tube things.
The Nautilus equipment?
No, I think you were talking about it a while back.
The Viper.
Viper. Yeah, I didn't know those are called Vipers. But yeah, it has that. And all those things are in this room, and there's never anyone in there. And it's just like my playground. Like, I love it. And it's $75 for 6 months.
Yeah. And I think what's really been interesting for me is I was able to get out of pain doing a couple years of physical therapy and like really upping my spring load on the Pilates equipment and like the gyrotonic, the equipment has weights, but I was still somewhat fragile in the sense that like, if I did anything out of my sort of box, I could feel like a little ouchy thing. And now lifting the heavier weights, it's like, provided this layer, I would say, of protection to where like I can do something that might not be the smartest and things don't fall apart.
Yeah.
Which I think, so I've been trying to get, you know, my clients who have been doing the Pilates and they're not in pain anymore and they're functioning, but they still like the little niggly things can come back if they, you know, like cook Thanksgiving dinner and they're on their feet for 7 hours or whatever. That I know wouldn't probably happen if they just sort of, you know, did some weights in addition.
Definitely. That's been my experience. Totally.
Yeah.
I don't think I have any other questions for you unless there's anything else you want to chat about. It's great talking to you.
Yeah. No, I mean, I could ask you a million questions. I want to hear all about physical therapy school and what you're up to. I feel like I could just hang out with you in real life and we could talk for hours. So I could come back and we could do an episode and I'll interview you if you want.
We could do that. I feel like I need to get a little bit more up here about what I might record some short episodes of epiphanies I've had or things that are shifting in my mindset as I'm going through school. Cause it's changing the way that I look at, movement and exercise and just day-to-day living in ways that I didn't expect. Like I'm coming to realizations and noticing things that I guess I didn't even know what I would think of it or what would happen and how things would shift when I went into school. So I was open to be like, we'll see. And and I think really some of the stuff we talked about today, actually some of the accessibility component is huge to see, like to think of people that are just more physically involved that, you know, like you're talking about your student that wants to do the squat up on the platform, but all the steps that have to happen to get up there. And the way that a regular vinyasa flow yoga class or even a beginner yoga class that's not a flow is structured with level changes to the ground and up again and all the things that I'm like, there's just a lot of people that aren't in these classes because it's just not appropriate for so many people with where they're working that suits them and is relevant to them to take that kind of class, you know, or who am I to say that it's for them to take that kind of class, but just things that are done in those classes that are just not going to be useful to so many people.
Yeah, I mean, a yoga class requires you to get up and down off the floor multiple times, whereas, say, a Feldenkrais class is done on the floor, but I've taken Feldenkrais classes where if somebody couldn't get up and down off the floor, like their caretaker would come and help them get onto the floor, and then an hour later at the end of class would help them get back up, but they could participate in the whole Feldenkrais class. Which then would work them towards maybe, you know, the lessons where it does involve getting up and down off the floor more frequently. Whereas with yoga, it's kind of like there's no, you know, you either can or you can't.
Yeah. And I've even started structuring, even before I was in school, but I started structuring my classes that are like, we're going to get down on the ground and just let that be a good long moment, like maybe a quarter of the class or a third of the class. Mm-hmm. And then when we come up to stand, we do this whole section standing for like 30 minutes. So like, you're not just constantly like up get down on the ground and get up again. And which has helped so many of my students. I mean, so many of my students, even just with like arthritic knees, and you know, it just hurts to be on hands and knees, like switching between hands and knees and standing constantly throughout class.
Well, and I'm curious because, you know, when I was doing mostly yoga, you know, I did feel like I needed to move all the time, I think, because I felt tight from all the stretching, you know, which sounds crazy, but it was like, but, you know, my body was like, you're not strong, so we're going to tighten up. And then I'm like, okay, I got to stretch you all the time and roll you. And now for you, because it's changed for me, I can sit for longer periods of time now that I'm stronger, because I don't feel that sort of tight, like I need to stretch and move thing as much.
Uh-huh.
Has that been the case for you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I can. And also I just feel more at ease in whatever position I'm in, because I know that like, it's okay to just sit how I sit, and I don't have to micromanage my pelvis and spine in every moment of every day. Like, it's okay to spend an hour and watch a show on Netflix slumped on the sofa, and then like get up to make a cup of tea and be like, oh, it feels good to move, and I'm going to move around for a little while. Like that it's like, I think the realization that posture, what one might consider poor posture, could be something that's optimal for someone because that's what their body is used to, and that's okay because they're safe there.
Yeah.
Like that. And like stuff like that has been kind of mind blowing to me recently that there could be work to be done to vary the loads in the body so that they're not always in that same shape. But if that's the shape that the person's always in, that's probably where their body is the safest right now, you know? Right. And that idea was kind of wild to me. So even just sitting around, I feel better because I'm not picking on myself all the time about trying to like fix my posture, sit really well in every moment, which is actually, I don't know, keeping me in the same position all the time, probably. Yeah. You try to hold your spine in good alignment always. You're holding your spine in one position all the time, which is not great for your joints.
Well, and you know, what's been fascinating is my husband's a doctor and he's a radiologist. So he looks at MRIs, CT scans and x-rays all day long. So he's, you know, he has head forward posture. And he would know enough to correct it because he lives with me and, you know, he's taken lots of yoga classes, but because that was just his nervous system and where that felt, you know, felt like that was normal and where his head should be. And since he started lifting weights, his head isn't as far forward.
Yeah.
Because he's just gained upper body strength.
Which is
so interesting, you know, like it's not about like, okay, hyoid back and, you know, it's just like the muscular changes have, you know, maybe I don't know, but it's fascinating.
Yeah.
To notice. Yeah.
It's whole body. I mean, the whole body supports the rest of the whole body. And like, if it's like, it looks like there's something wrong in the neck, you don't necessarily need to just go to the neck, but getting everything stronger in the upper body is super helpful.
Well, and one last thing that I'm thinking of is whenever people would say, you know, like why in Pilates do they always say shoulders back and down? And I would, you know, I said, well, you know, when Joseph and like during his time, he made his living training dancers and especially Martha Graham style, you know, and ballet, and the aesthetic is shoulders back and down, you know, tuck the tail under. So you want to look like you have a long neck, you know, and that you have sort of no butt. Like that's why they would tuck, you know, cause it's the aesthetic. And, but then, you know, I think about Iyengar and Patabi Joyce and Descachar, and like, they were all in the same era as Joseph. Like they were all influenced by the same things, you know, the Swedish gymnastics and the wrestling and the, and so a lot of the cueing, in yoga, you know, comes from that same place. Like the paradigm in even physical therapy, when it first became like a profession, the style of the culture was, you know, that sort of military posture.
Yeah.
And so while we might think that, oh, that's like, you know, spiritual yoga, old, it's like, no, it's actually just like what was how people were supposed to carry themselves in the 1940s, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s,
mm-hmm.
60s.
Well, yeah. And I've heard it also discussed in terms of the style of like the school systems and the way kids were taught at that time. When you're thinking about like Krishnamacharya and like the more kind of regimented environment for education. And like, so it comes from all of that too.
Yeah. And so then when people say like, oh, well, you know, I don't like cue them shoulders back and down or something, and they're expecting it. And they're like, but isn't it wrong if you, and it's like, well, you know,
right.
I mean, even the like shoulders down when your arms are overhead, I think came from a somewhat of an aesthetic place of like, ooh, it just doesn't look nice mm-hmm. when I can't see your neck.
Or like tightness in your upper traps, or you're just going to be really tight in these muscles up here. Where like really what I'm finding is like the best thing for my neck ever has been strengthening, like building up my upper traps and my neck feels so much better. Like, so who knows? I don't know.
No, it's fascinating.
Yeah, it all just like, it's like this spectrum that just, or a pendulum, I guess, just swings back and forth to like one end to the other. Yes. And yeah, it's a good thing though. Keeps us on our toes.
Definitely. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it's really good talking to you. I think maybe we can wrap it up, but I'd love to have you on here again and... I can talk more about school, or maybe I'll record some episodes and talk a little bit more about school, or I don't know. I want to get some group calls going too. So a panel discussion.
Well, I'd love to come back. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, if you want to be, if I know I could come up with lots of questions to ask you. I'm so curious about so many different things. You know, along your journey, just as a yoga teacher, trainer, and a yoga practitioner, and like how you came to yoga, especially, you know, it's the more podcast episodes you have, I think it's, you know, like people always want to know sort of your origin story, I think.
Yeah.
And I get it in little bits and pieces on Instagram, which I love. But like each time I'm like, no way, she's from Omaha or from Nebraska. Like, now that makes sense. Like I'm from the Midwest too. Or, you know, just little things that like just now I didn't know. I had no idea that you were a theater major. And I'm like, oh, and you like cats. Like, of course you're friends with Laurel. You know,
just... theater and cats.
Yeah.
To be continued. I have to work out the tech, but I think a group panel discussion could be really fun and just have a different topic every once in a while and riff on that and get a group of people chatting.
Yeah, there's two Pilates podcasts that I listen to a lot, and they have each done it, and I liked it. One is... called the Thinking Pilates Podcast. Mm-hmm. And they've done several episodes with, you know, a group of people. And then Pilates Unfiltered is another podcast where she's had like a specific topic with more than, you know, one or two people. And it, I think it'd be cool. Definitely.
I think it'd be good. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Trina.
Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Trina Altman. Definitely head over to her website, trinaaltman.com. I'll put a link in the notes for the episode. And if you want to get in touch with me, head to my website, caitlincasella.com. My email address is there. I'd love to continue the conversation with you and answer any questions that you might have. Also, I send out regular emails, and if you want to get on my email list, there's a form that you can fill out over there on my website as well. You'll receive a little bit of writing about my journey through PT school and everything that that's illuminating for me in my movement practice. So thank you for listening, and I hope that we'll be in touch soon.